Saying goodbye is never easy, but there is something particularly painful about saying goodbye to an endling. That's what they call the last known survivor of a species. George, the Hawaiian land snail, was an endling. He was born in a lab and died in a lab, waiting for a mate to save his kind. He was part of Hawaii's Snail Extinction Prevention Program through the State Division of Forestry and Wildlife, and David Sisko is the program coordinator. He and his team looked after George for 14 years. And he says there is an abundance of reasons why we should all care about the demise of George. David joins us now from Hawaii. Aloha.
Aloha.
Before we talk about his death, tell us about George's life. How did he become the last of his species?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a long story that goes back quite a ways. Akatsunella apex fulva was actually the first land snail to be described by Western science from the Hawaiian Islands out of 752 described species. So that's an interesting tidbit. But for a long time, Akatsunella apex fulva was thought to be extinct already. It existed in lower elevation habitat that had been heavily impacted by introduced species. In 1997, 10 individuals were found along a hiking trail on the island of Oahu, and all of those individuals were brought to the University of Hawaii for a last-ditch effort at captively rearing them. And they persisted in the lab, and they had a few babies, one of them being George. And then unfortunately, it appears that a pathogen came into the lab and impacted several populations of tree snails that were being reared. And one of the populations was the Akatsunella apex fulva population. And all of the individuals died except one subadult snail, and that was George. And he's been by himself ever since.
Why'd you call him George?
We named him, actually, I believe students named him George after the last Pinta Island Galapagos tortoise that was also named George and was an endling. So they both have shells. They both lived alone. Made sense.
And he never lived in the forests where his parents were found. How hard is it to look after a snail in captivity?
It's surprisingly complicated. So our snails are reared in environmental chambers that look like big refrigerators. And these control temperature, relative humidity, light, and actually weather patterns like rain. We miss the snails periodically throughout the day. And so this mimics the conditions from where they're from. And we are very concerned about pathogen spread. So the lab is run somewhat like a hospital in that everything is quarantined and sterilized on a regular basis to prevent something terrible happening, like a pathogen coming through. So it's a significant amount of effort to rear these snails in captivity.
We've got the only known photo of George on our website. Can you describe for us what he looked like? And was he a bit of a celebrity in your lab?
Yeah, you know, he's kind of a local celebrity in Hawaii in general, and now actually in the world. But yeah, he's been Lonesome George for since about 2009. He's been the last known Akatsunella apex fulva, and so he's been featured in many local articles, and I think arguably thousands of school children and visitors to the lab have come through and have seen him. So he was really a great ambassador for the plight of our land snails in the islands. But George is about, or was about, an inch long, and he was kind of a gray color with a swirl up his spire of white. The species in general, though, was very variable, and they came in all different colors. George was a rather plain one, but in general, the species was very beautiful and traditionally was used to make lei in Hawaii.
Does it change your interaction with these creatures when you know you're working with the very last of their kind?
Yeah, it does. It's a very heavy feeling to have the last individual in your hands, or even under your care for that matter. But yeah, I didn't even like handling George. I didn't want to look at him wrong or anything and have him die on your watch. I mean, we knew he was getting very old, so we treated him with kid gloves.
Is this how you saw yourself, David, when you were growing up in California as a snail savior in Hawaii?
My dad was a science teacher, and my mom worked for a zoological society. So I had grown up around animals and with a conservation ethic. So I was always interested and cared very much about endangered species and conservation. But snails really weren't on my radar.
I have to ask, have you ever heard a snail sing?
I've never heard them sing, but it might just be that they don't sing for scientists.
Tell us about, because the native Hawaiians talk about this in their folklore is probably not the right word, but historically they talk about snails singing.
Yeah, so land snails in the Hawaiian Islands were intricately associated with Hawaiian culture. And in traditional pieces of Hawaiian poetry and in folklore, snails sang in the forest. And many of the names and phrases for snails refer to that ability, that voice, that singing ability. They're known as the voice of the forest, the voice on the mountain, the music on the mountain. And they're often associated with good omens and with things of a romantic nature happening. There's hula and chant that involves snails. And it's really beautiful. And those traditions continue today. And it's not known exactly what the voice is. There's lots of different theories. Mollusks in general don't have a sound-producing organ. But it was thought that perhaps congregations of their shells would whistle in the wind. The sound has been described as whistling or trilling. It's also thought that the sound might have been misattributed or purposefully attributed to snails from insects, which are hard to see but make lots of noise in the forest. Or they might just not sing for scientists. I don't know, but it's really beautiful, and they're very important. As you know, Polynesians historically have passed on their genealogy, their history through voice, through chant, and so voice was very important for Polynesian cultures like Hawaiians.
There are a lot of snails on the islands of Hawaii. What role do they play in the ecosystem there?
Yeah, so there were 752 species of snail described from the Hawaiian Islands. And just to give you an idea, that's comparable to the diversity of the mainland U.S. And Hawaii is 1/1700th the size. So pretty spectacular amount of diversity packed into these little islands. And they were important components of forest ecosystems. They contributed to energy turnover in the forest. And many of our species actually glean algae and fungus and bacteria from leaf surfaces. And so they may have a significant role in preventing plant pathogens and have a role in forest health. And we often use them as a canary in a coal mine. When the snails start disappearing from what appears to be a healthy forest, it's usually a bad omen, a sign of future extinction and extirpations that's to come.
I mean, it's not a competition, but New Zealand has an estimated 1,400 native species of slugs and snails. Have you ever come and seen any of our palafanta or any of the giant ones over here?
I have not, but I've read lots about them, and they look very interesting and terrifying almost, the carnivorous ones.
Yeah, that's right. They suck up earthworms like spaghetti, which...
Yep.
Which brings us to the rosy wolf snail, speaking of nasty snails. So tell us about this one.
The rosy wolf snail, well, I'll back up a little bit. In the 1930s, the giant African snail was introduced to islands throughout the Pacific, including Hawaii. And this snail, what I've read is that it came here as a potential food source, but people also moved it around as almost a lawn ornament because they liked how it looked and it was interesting. And it became a significant pest. It's an agricultural pest and reached plague proportions on many islands. And so a significant amount of effort was put into trying to stop their spread and to reduce their numbers.
They're huge, and, right? I'm looking at a photo now of someone holding one in their hand, and it's about the same size as a human hand, at least.
They're gigantic. Yeah, they're really large snails, and they eat plants. So they're not gleaning algae and fungus and like our native snails do. They're actually eating plants, and they really like vegetable gardens and ornamental plants and crops. So at the time, the Department of Agriculture in Hawaii brought in quite a few different mollusk predators to try and combat this, and one of them stuck, and that was Euglandina rosea, or the rosy wolf snail. And this is a carnivorous snail that only eats other mollusks, and its native range is southern United States. And it's now on all main Hawaiian islands, and it's just devouring our native fauna. It's the main driver of extinction in our mollusk species here.
Yeah, I made the mistake of looking on YouTube for the rosy wolf snail eating another snail, and they are deadly, right?
They're deadly. If the snail is small enough, they will eat it whole. And if it's not, they actually manipulate the shell around so that the aperture is facing up, and they have this modified radula, which is the snail's tongue that almost, when you look at it under a microscope, has daggers, and they literally kind of vacuum up the poor snail right out of its shell and just leave the shell empty. And they actually track slime, so they're a highly mobile for a snail. They're very fast, and they have these appendages on their head where they can detect chemical cues laid down in slime from other snails that is their prey, and they know the directionality that slime was laid down, and they can track them and slime right up to them and gobble them up. Mm. They're a very efficient predator.
And how much of a problem have they been for your native snails?
They are the main driver. We have several introduced species that depredate snails, including rats. I know New Zealand has a rat problem. Jackson's chameleons are known to eat mollusks, and those were introduced here from Kenya through the exotic pet trade. But the most insidious threat are these introduced rosy wolf snails that are on every island, and at this point they're causing mass extinction of our mollusk fauna in a very short amount of time.
I'm speaking to David Sisko, who is program coordinator for Hawaii's Snail Extinction Prevention Program, that's run through the State Division of Forestry and Wildlife, and he was in charge of looking after the last snail, Acatinella apex fulva snail. We'll just call him George. How did you learn that George died?
I learned about George passing from a text message that I received at about 7 a.m. on January 2nd. So our lab manager goes in early, and unfortunately, January 1st was a holiday, so no one was there when he passed. But he was found early in the morning the next day. And I knew something bad has happened, because I never usually get a text or a call from Lindsay, our lab manager, that early. So I kind of had a pit in my stomach as soon as I saw her name pop up on my phone.
Presuming you have some other snails left on the ark.
We do. We currently have 38 species from 5 islands. All of them are extinct in the wild, or we think will be extinct within the next several years due to the rosy wolf snail. And unfortunately, we're planning for the extinction of around 100 snails in the next decade, 100 snail species. That's what we're trying to prevent. It's happening really, really fast, and it's across islands, across property boundaries. It's really a crisis for this fauna.
Did you have a little funeral for George?
No, we didn't have a funeral. We plopped his body in some ethanol, and his shell is sitting in a vial. But it was a sad day for sure. We all talked about him a little bit, and he was a constant for 14 years in the laboratories that reared him. So it was a sad day. I know it's just a snail, but there was a lot of history with that species, it being the first snail to be described from the Hawaiian Islands, and it's one of the first snail species where a significant amount of effort has been put into trying to save it, and it still went extinct. So that was kind of a double whammy. Yeah.
So here in New Zealand, we are trapping rats and poisoning rats. We have rat-proof fences. What are you doing about this rosy wolf snail, if anything?
Yeah, so I'd just like to say that Hawaii in general takes a lot of inspiration from New Zealand, your predator-free 2050 initiative, and many of the rat traps and devices that we use, and even fencing designs come from New Zealand. So
Great.
we appreciate that. The world is watching, and it definitely inspires us. But we are one of the most effective ways to protect our species in situ, so out in the wild, is with predator-proof fencing. And the design is similar to predator-proof fences that you folks use in New Zealand. It's only ours are well, you might have them too, but they're solid wall barriers, and they have a hood on the top that keeps rats out. And then we have several modifications to the bottom of the fence that are barriers to keep the rosy wolf snail out. And those include a skirt around the entire fence that's at a 15 degree angle that is difficult for the rosy wolf snails to get around. And if they do, we have a little shelf that sticks out with cut copper wire mesh that's really sharp and pokey and difficult for them to get a purchase on and get around. But if they get across that, we electrocute them. So, the combination of those three barriers is pretty effective at protecting the snails inside.
It would have to be a pretty
But
keen Rosy Wolf snail who made it all the way to the electrocution phase.
yeah, I'd say, yeah. But at this point in time, that's one of our only ways to keep these snails on the landscape is with these predator barriers, unfortunately.
Any way you can get, are you thinking about eradication at all?
At this point, it's hard to imagine that. The rosy wolf snails are very hard to detect. There is no poison for them that wouldn't also poison our native mollusks. So we have no real effective way to remove them aside from manually searching for them and destroying them. So it makes it very hard to control them outside of a predator-proof fenced area where they can't continually enter. But I'm hopeful in the future that some of the gene drive technology that's coming down the pipeline may actually give us some tools to locally control them or even eliminate them from parts of the islands. So, but we have to get them through this point first.
How hard is it to get people to care about snails?
Most people's interactions with invertebrates are negative, and so it's an uphill battle. Invertebrates in general don't receive a ton of conservation effort and attention, even though they are some of the main drivers of ecosystems and our food and provide important ecosystem services to a lot of other animals and plants. But yeah, most people's interactions with them are negative. They're garden pests. They're biting you. They're slimy and gooey. But our snails are relatively charismatic. They're very beautiful. They have some really interesting and beautiful associations with local culture here. So it's actually, I think, much easier to explain to people locally the importance of snails. They get it, but when you speak outside of Hawaii, people scratch their heads and often wonder why so much effort is being put into saving a snail, unfortunately.
Any chance there's another George out there?
Yeah, there is always a chance. It's very difficult to call anything extinct for certain, especially something as small as a snail. But I'm not very hopeful. People have been, including myself, have been looking for these animals for over 30 years, and haven't found any. And over the last 5 years, we've seen all of the similar species of tree snail across the islands just tank. And so I think if there are any out there, they're experiencing the same declines, and they will probably be gone before we get to them.
Is there any chance of a Jurassic Park-like ending for George and his species sometime in the future? What are the chances of bringing a species back to life at some point?
It's probably a slim chance, but we recognized several years ago that George might be the last Acinetella apex vulva that anyone ever sees, and it might be our last chance to collect living tissue from him. And so it was actually the most terrifying thing to cut him, but we cut a small sliver of tissue from his body, and it was plunked in media to keep it alive, and it was FedExed to the San Diego Zoo's frozen zoo, and it's now in deep freeze. And so there aren't currently methods to clone mollusks, but there might be someday. And so we thought we better take the opportunity while we still have to collect living tissue from him. And so there, George remains alive in some sense, with a tiny little snippet of his foot in a deep freeze.
Yep. Hey, good for you. We are sending you love and luck from New Zealand, where we know all about these issues. And thank you for sharing the story of George today, and we wish you success.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.